Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, April the 12th, 2020. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope everyone's having the best week they possibly can, best weekend they possibly can. Obviously, the pandemic, this stuff's still going on. It's another weekend of a lot of, cancellations for shows that just aren't happening. A whole bunch of stuff going on in the world and, of course, in the world of professional wrestling. So, yeah, I just hope that everyone's safe and healthy and that we're all just kind of getting through this day by day and hopefully things get back to normal as soon as possible. So on this episode of The Weekender, I do have some results for y'all for some recent episodes and some shows. And then we'll just kind of freestyle it for a little bit as well. On today's show, we're going to be talking results for 205 Live, Impact Wrestling, MLW Fusion. So once again, we'll be talking Major League Wrestling on this show for the second week in a row. We're going to talk just some funny stuff from the National Wrestling Alliance. You know, they don't have any new shows going on right now, and all their stuff has been postponed. And I saw on their YouTube channel a couple weeks ago, they put up an interview where Tim Storm is talking about meeting Joe Exotic back in 2016. And Joe Exotic, of course, gained a ton of fame recently through the Tiger King documentary on Netflix. So I'll talk a little bit about that. And before we get started on all those topics and results and all that good stuff, I always want to give you a show to watch on IWTV. And my recommended show this week is Game Changer Wrestling's Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. So the company is called Game Changer Wrestling, also known as GCW, and the show is Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. This show happened back on April the 4th of 2019, so a little over a year ago. But it's been recently uploaded to independentwrestling.tv. So these are the matches to expect if you want to check this out. And by the way, this was basically the way that these shows are put together. It's kind of this hybrid style of, like, worked shoot matches that you may have seen back in the day from companies like UWF and those kind of things. Like the early kind of Pancrase as well. I mean, there's Shudo and the old MMA companies that were also, even Pride to an extent, there were fights in Pride that were, you know, fixed as far as the winners being determined ahead of time and stuff like that, but it was made to look like a legitimate sport. That's similar to these Bloodsport shows, and there's no ropes, and I believe the only way to win a match is submission or knockout. I'm almost positive none of these matches you could pin to win. I don't think any of them have, like, traditional wrestling rules in that manner. But these are the matches to expect if you want to check it out. Really, really cool show, really cool concept. And they've done it a couple years now. Really big fan of this style of wrestling. We had Dominic Guarini versus Phil Baroni. So right there, Dominic Guarini, who's a legitimate purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, does a lot of great work with MLW and various independent wrestling promotions. He was a second ever Bone Storm champion at Southern Underground Pro, which is the place that I've seen him live the most. Yeah, just great MMA-based wrestler. And Phil Baroni, for those of you who may not know, who just kind of watch wrestling and may not know a whole lot about mixed martial arts, Phil Baroni is a former UFC fighter who basically, I mean, he was called the New York Badass. And I'm not, like, really telling any tales out of school. He's basically like a juiced-up, muscle-head, just hard-headed, just, it's hard to explain. He cuts some strange promos. He kind of lives in that weird in-between of, like, being a pro wrestling character, but legitimately fighting in MMA. I always wanted to get into a major professional wrestling promotion for a long time as well. Like, he's a huge fan of pro wrestling, and obviously if he's taking part in shows like this. So it's something where a very interesting matchup between Phil Baroni and Dominic Guarini, but very, very cool matchup. A matchup that makes a lot of sense to put together, and the match is brutal. After that, we had Simon Grimm, who is the former, he was part of the Vaudevillains, as Simon Gotch took on J.R. Kratos. Davey Boy Smith Jr. took on Killer Kross. And this match is interesting for a lot of reasons. One being that Davey Boy Smith Jr. actually has been training, like, legitimate MMA for a long time now. And Killer Kross did the same. Killer Kross, from my understanding, Killer Kross, had the intention of becoming a full-time mixed martial artist and went through all the training that you would need to, you know, start fighting professionally, and then just kind of went the route of professional wrestling instead. Whereas Davey Boy Smith Jr. kind of did the opposite. He went the route of professional wrestling, made it to the WWE at a young age, and then started training, like, I don't know how often he was training MMA when he was with the WWE, if at all, but I know that he heavily trains it now, and I know he definitely did over the last, you know, handful of years. So, really cool matchup there. Another matchup that makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. We also had Takeda versus Jonathan Gresham. Takeda, you know, just a legend in, you know, Japanese wrestling. And then you have Jonathan Gresham, who, in my opinion, is one of, if not the best technical wrestlers on the planet right now as far as professional wrestling is concerned. So, a really cool matchup there. You guys know, if you listen to this show weekly, how highly I think of Jonathan Gresham. I've been saying for years, but I've really been saying it, you know, for the last however long I've been doing this podcast here at Fightful Select, about a year and a half now, give or take. I've been saying almost every episode, Jonathan Gresham should have been the Ring of Honor World Champion this whole time. Like, that's how talented I think that Jonathan Gresham is. After that, we had Chris Dickinson versus Andy Williams, and I'll highlight Chris Dickinson here. He's somebody that I want to give a kind of a special shout-out to, because I know that this year's WrestleMania weekend, which obviously all of the events surrounding WrestleMania were canceled, all the big independent shows that would normally get a huge rub off of having the WrestleMania crowd in town, Chris Dickinson was set up to have a huge WrestleMania weekend. He was going to be spotlighted heavily in some really big matches, heavily spotlighted as far as, like, you know, headlining some big shows, having some matches against some big names. And there were a lot of eyes on him, or there were going to be a lot of eyes on him that weekend. And it was going to be a really good opportunity for him to maybe make that next level, make that jump to the next level, to maybe, you know, an AEW, an NXT. Even the next level, I guess, would even have to be considered, like, Impact Wrestling. Like, you know, they have more TV exposure than you would get on IWTV. But, you know, I will say... And this isn't a knock on Impact, like, well, kind of is unintentionally, but, like, if I'm somebody who has a shot at getting to getting signed to AEW, NXT, WWE, any of those companies, even New Japan, of course, you know, you'd have to deal with, you know, traveling to Japan, which a lot of people wouldn't want to have to do, and I understand that as well. But if you have those kind of opportunities, I would not sign with Impact Wrestling. And now, there are plenty of really talented people who have signed there over the last few years. Like, Ethan Page comes to mind, Josh Alexander. They're a fantastic tag team. They're one of the best tag teams I've seen in a long time. And they do great work in Impact Wrestling. But I think that they would have more eyes on them and be getting... there'd be a lot more buzz around both of them in the world of wrestling if they were signed to AEW, for instance, in that tag team division. You have Jordynne Grace, who I talk about constantly, about how huge of a deal it would be if she got signed to AEW, because she basically can provide everything that AEW wants out of Nyla Rose that they can't get out of her. You get a dominant female champion who has good matches and doesn't botch and can carry that title and be that monster, whether she's a heel or a babyface. I think that Jordynne Grace could be the face of Impact or of AEW's women's division, similar to how she's become the face of the Knockouts division in Impact. You know, Taya Valkyrie was the champion for a long time there, and I thought that Jordynne Grace should have beat her for that belt a long time ago. And Taya Valkyrie is good, but she had a really long reign, and I think that Jordynne should have won the title sooner. But now we're in a spot where she's clearly the number one women's wrestler in that division. Of course, you have Tessa Blanchard as the main champion, the World Heavyweight Champion, which obviously should be seen as a step above. But, you know, it's really interesting times. You know, I think Jordynne can be a huge asset to a company like AEW. And so could Tessa, speaking of Impact Wrestling. I mean, Tessa would be huge. I think she'd actually be a better fit. Well, she'd be a great fit in AEW. I mean, obviously, Tully's there already, stuff like that, but there's some huge matches she could have in WWE. Like, she could headline WrestleMania potentially against someone like Charlotte or you know, Becky. And there's so many big matches that she could have in WWE. But I'd love to see her versus Charlotte. That's kind of the match that I feel like everyone wants to see. But that's all to say that, you know, and then I could go on and on about other people. Similar to Marty Scurll signing with Ring of Honor. Now, I think that there's more to that. Now, you know, he's wrestling for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. I feel like he's going to show up in New Japan. I feel like he's going to show up in AEW. I feel like his deal with Ring of Honor has got to allow him to go all over the place. Just speculation, but this is all to say that if somebody has the opportunity, like, I wouldn't sign with Impact Wrestling because you get kind of lost in the fold, and, like, you don't get much buzz built around you on the scene of wrestling just in general. Like, you could be having the best matches of all time on Impact Wrestling, and nobody's really paying attention right now. I mean, I feel bad for people like Willie Mack, who, once again, NXT or AEW would be perfect fits for that guy. And if he's going to be with Impact Wrestling, I would hope he would be, you know, the World Heavyweight Champion or on that level. And they haven't presented him in that way. They're building him up right now, it looks like, at least marginally. But, you know, that's all to say, you know, Chris Dickinson, somebody that I think had a good chance of getting signed to a big company coming out of WrestleMania weekend. And he didn't get that opportunity. But hopefully, hopefully things turn around and he gets those opportunities in the future. Shout out to David Bixenspan, who had a really great article. I believe it was on Vice.com a few weeks ago. And Chris Dickinson was somebody that he highlighted in that, talking about how big of a hit it was going to take to his career not being able to perform over that weekend. So definitely check that article out. It was really, really well written, as is all the stuff that Bix writes. You know, he's kind of a polarizing figure in professional wrestling, more specifically in professional wrestling journalism. If you think that exists, whether you think that pro wrestling journalism really exists or not, Bix is a legitimate writer and he knows his stuff. He knows more about wrestling than I'll ever know, and I consider myself to know a lot about wrestling. So that really says a lot to that guy's level of knowledge and the history of the sport for so long. So. I would recommend checking his stuff out. Whether you like the things that he tweets or his, you know, personal opinions on stuff, which I'm not saying I do or I don't. I'm just saying I know that there are people that do and there's people that don't. But I would recommend checking out his writing because his works, especially this particular article that I'm talking about from Vice about WrestleMania weekend being canceled essentially for all independent talent, I would highly recommend checking that out to get some perspective. After that, on the show, we had Frank Mir versus Dan Severn, which is just a crazy dream match. Like, this would be a dream match in MMA had it happened, you know, 15 years ago, maybe even longer. Frank Mir's been around a long time already, and Dan Severn's like an OG of mixed martial arts. And this is really cool. Both guys, former UFC heavyweight champions. Well, Dan Severn, you know, was the super fight champion, and that belt was like an open weight belt. And then he was also the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion. And Frank Mir, of course, multiple times. He was the UFC Heavyweight Champion, lost the belt because, or he had to vacate the belt because he got in a motorcycle accident. And then he came back, wound up beating Nogueira for the interim title at the same time that Brock Lesnar defeated Randy Couture for the main title. The two of them fought in a unification bout, and so Frank Mir, main event of UFC 100 against Brock Lesnar, which was a really big historic moment. So yeah, really, really, really cool stuff here. Really cool kind of dream match that you really wouldn't want to see in MMA now because the guys are both, you know, out of their prime, but it's cool to see in pro wrestling. It's similar to, like Minoru Suzuki, who I'll be talking about here in a moment, like having someone like, he's on the same kind of wavelength as someone like Dan Severn or Frank Mir, kind of, as far as I'm concerned, where it's like, I don't really want to see them fighting in MMA anymore, but if they can have convincing pro wrestling matches, I'm all for it. After that, we had Timothy Thatcher versus Hideki Suzuki. Another really, really cool stylistic matchup. I mean, Timothy Thatcher especially, I believe he I believe he was recently signed to the WWE. I think he's at the Performance Center. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure Timothy Thatcher got signed not too long ago. So, looking forward to seeing what comes next for him, because he's been on the independent scene for so long as one of the top guys and such a great technical wrestler, so that'll be really interesting. The main event of this show, we had Minoru Suzuki, who I just mentioned, versus Josh Barnett. Of course, Josh Barnett's blood sport. Awesome stuff. I mean, just so cool to see the two of these guys in the ring. Say what you will about Josh Barnett. it's hard to get behind him as an MMA fan at this point. Well, it has been for a long time, but for those of you who don't know, Barnett has a history of, I don't even know the best way of saying this, because I'm a fan of his. I like Josh Barnett. I've met him in person. He's super cool, super nice guy. I am a big fan of his. But if you look through history, you know, like, he was the UFC heavyweight champion. He was the youngest UFC heavyweight champion in history and had to vacate the belt because of failed steroid tests, wound up, you know, having more issues with, you know, not being able to pass, you know, steroid tests, just call it what it is, you know, couldn't pass steroid tests. There was an instance where he was going to fight Fedor Emelianenko, who at the time was considered the best heavyweight in the world and possibly the best MMA fighter of all time at that point. They were supposed to fight in the second ever Affliction show, and that was supposed to be the main event. And like a day or so before the show, Barnett failed for steroids, and they couldn't put the show together because of it. And the whole entire promotion wound up going under. And then recently, like, there's been, and this has nothing to do with steroids. Like, recently, Barnett was supposed to fight for Bellator, make his Bellator debut at like a, it was like a show for the troops. And, he wound up getting sick, like as the show was happening, which is just crazy. I'm not blaming him or saying like he was fake, nothing like that. Like, I legitimately think he was sick, but just really, really bad timing. So he was supposed to return, and then literally as the show was happening, they made the announcement that Barnett couldn't fight, and he was the main event of the show. And then, really recently, there was another one where he was supposed to be fighting at Bellator, and something happened. I know the shows themselves were getting canceled anyways, but something else happened where he didn't get cleared recently, so it's just, it's tough. But if he's involved in pro wrestling, we don't really have to worry about that stuff. Like, I mean, some of the major promotions are claiming, at least, to be, you know, testing for steroids, but it's hard for me to believe that most places Josh Barnett would work, he could write something in where he's part-time and not having to worry about that side of it. Like, if he wants to take steroids or supplements or HGH, whatever he takes, I don't care. Like, if he's not legitimately competing against people, if it's professional wrestling, I don't care what he takes. Because, you know, he's not actually fighting people in an MMA or in a UFC, jeez. He's not actually fighting people in a pro wrestling ring, but obviously he is in an MMA cage or an MMA ring, depending on where he's fighting. Minoru Suzuki is one of my favorite wrestlers in the world still right now. Like, I love his work in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Really cool, his recent feud with Jon Moxley over there in Japan. A huge Suzuki fan. So really cool to see Suzuki versus Barnett in Bloodsport in the main event. So, once again, that's my recommended show this week for independentwrestling.tv. It is Game Changer Wrestling's Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. It's available right now on demand. Moving on, I have a free match for y'all to check out if you want on YouTube. Last week I chose a Ring of Honor match, and this week I did the same. Once again, kind of because Ring of Honor, we normally cover their weekly show, but they just kind of had like a best of Jay Lethal show this past week, so nothing really new to talk about. So I figured I'd recommend a free match for y'all to check out. It's on Ring of Honor Wrestling's YouTube channel. It's for free. You can check it out right now. It's a triple threat match. Kenny Omega versus Bryan Danielson versus Tyler Black. Of course, Kenny Omega, part of AEW now. Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan in the WWE, and Tyler Black, Seth Rollins in the WWE. This was from Ring of Honor's Bound by Hate 2008. So this is about 12 years ago. And it's a triple threat match between three of the biggest stars in the industry right now. You know, Seth Rollins is arguably one of the, you know, the top people on Raw. Daniel Bryan, one of the top people on SmackDown. And Kenny Omega, one of the top people in AEW. So, really cool triple threat match between the three. So, you can check that out right now. And that's my recommended show for free on YouTube this week. Ring of Honor Triple Threat, Omega versus Danielson versus Tyler Black from Bound by Hate 2008. That rhymes. Moving on, we have 205 Live results. Started off with Tony Nese defeating Danny Burch. The finish came when Nese hit the running Nese for the win. And in the second and only other match of the show, it was a no contest between Oney Lorcan and Gentleman Jack Gallagher. The finish came when basically Tony Nese interfered in the match, and that brought out Danny Burch to come help out Oney Lorcan. So yeah, I mean, decent show. I mean, this kind of is what it always is. I don't like seeing no contests in really ever, but especially in main events of shows. This is a decent match before that happened. And Tony Nese versus Danny Burch before it, solid match. You're always going to get just a solid match between the two of them. Very reliable performers in the ring. It's worth mentioning, I saw something recently about Jordan Devlin won't be able to defend the NXT Cruiserweight Championship anytime soon. I'm assuming that's because I haven't really read into the reason. I just kind of saw this kind of in the corner of my eye almost. But I'm assuming it's because he can't travel from the UK, if that is where he's living. If he's living in the UK, it's going to be difficult to get over here to Florida, to the Performance Center here in the States, to be defending that title. So it makes sense that they are going to be crowning an interim NXT Cruiserweight Champion, which is interesting because that's a page out of MMA's book, mainly the UFC's book. A lot of interim titles, especially over recent years in UFC. There was going to be another one this upcoming Saturday between Tony Ferguson and Justin Gaethje, because current lightweight champion Khabib Nurmagomedov can't get out of Russia to do the fight here over in the States. They were planning on doing it in California. So it's kind of cool to see. It makes it kind of feel like a sport where the champion can't defend. So let's get another champion in the meantime, and then whenever, in theory, this doesn't always work out this way in the UFC, unfortunately, but in theory, if there is an NXT interim Cruiserweight champion, whoever that is, when Jordan Devlin is able to return to the States, then they should have a match to unify, and there should be an undisputed champion at the end of that. So we have a Group A. I don't know if there's like Group A, B, C, and D, or just Group A and B. I don't know if it's a two-group thing or a four-group thing. But I did see Group A for the tournament to crown the interim champion will be Kushida, Drake Maverick, Tony Nese, and Jake Atlas. Jake Atlas is a very interesting choice. I'm assuming he probably lives in or near Orlando because he's such like a new signing to WWE. He's probably in the Performance Center all the time anyway. So it makes sense to put him in there because he's accessible there. Drake Maverick, same kind of thing. So I don't see either of them winning. So I'd be interested to see Kushida or Tony Nese. They're kind of consistently keeping Tony Nese towards the top of the card in 205 Live. But I'd prefer to see Kushida get the rub. Maybe Kushida to win the entire thing. I feel like he's lost a lot of momentum since joining WWE. He was a really big signing coming out of New Japan. At least that's how I felt about it, because he had such a great career over there, especially as a junior in the tag team divisions. So like the time splitters with him and Alex Shelley was great. His junior heavyweight title matches and stuff like that. He was the champion a lot of times over there, basically their cruiserweights in New Japan. So Kushida has everything it takes, and I'm a big fan of his. I'm a fan of actually all four of these guys to some degree. Drake Maverick I've met in person a few times. He used to live in Nashville at the same time that I did, and I'd see him at indie shows and stuff like that every now and then. Always a really cool guy, really nice. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Of these four, I'm hoping Kushida wins this group, but it'll be interesting to see who else fills out the rest of this bracket and how many people will be involved. So, that's what's going on 205 Live right now. Nothing to talk about with NXT UK. From what I've seen, they're going to be running some best of shows, but there hasn't been anything new to talk about. So nothing I can really dive deep into as far as NXT UK this week, other than just knowing Jordan Devlin, who I've just mentioned before, he's part of NXT UK, and he's unable to compete as the Cruiserweight Champion currently. So just not really anything we can really talk about NXT UK-wise, but I do hope that something happens soon to continue to highlight Dragunov, because they've really been building him up. So maybe some sort of special on the network about him, or maybe a special that highlights a few of the UK people that we can't really see on TV in new matches for the time being. I I'd like to maybe see something like that. Up next, we have Impact Wrestling results. This is for the show that aired on the 7th. Started off with a 2-on-1 handicap match where Willie Mack defeated Reno Scum. Got the win with a 6-star frog splash. I'm totally fine with that. I want Willie Mack to continue to get big pushes. After the match, Ace Austin attacks Willie Mack, which is great because it just reaffirms that they're going to go with Willie Mack versus Ace Austin for the Exhibition Championship in the near future, and I'm all about it. I've been saying forever I want Willie Mack to be like the World Heavyweight Champion, but if he can't have that title, I'm totally fine with him chasing after the Exhibition Championship and possibly even beating Ace Austin for it. I think Ace Austin is a great champion as well. That's what you call a win-win situation. Whether Willie Mack is a champion or Ace Austin is a champion, whoever wins that match, it doesn't really matter because both guys are great, both deserve to be champion, and whoever loses doesn't really look any worse for losing to the other. So we'll see what happens. Unfortunately, the way that a lot of these companies work recently, that goes for WWE and, Impact Wrestling as well, where, like, Impact Wrestling, Ty Valkyrie loses the Knockouts Championship and gets a shot at the World Heavyweight title against Tessa. Makes no sense. You see in the WWE all the time, too. Braun Strowman loses the Intercontinental Championship. He gets a shot at the world title. You know, that kind of stuff. I don't like that. I don't like that idea. So, like, I wouldn't like to see, you know, if Ace Austin loses the Exhibition Championship to Willie Mack, then Ace Austin gets a shot at the World Heavyweight Championship, like, soon after. I hate that concept, and I hope that's not where they go with any of that. Next match we had, Chris Bay defeats Daga. The finish comes when Chris counters a sunset flip, holds the ropes to get the pin, 1-2-3. Up next, Havoc defeated Madison Rayne by pinfall, got the win with her tombstone piledriver. Nothing wrong with any of that stuff, just solid matches that just serve the purpose that they were meant to serve. That led into Rhino and Tommy Dreamer defeating OVE. The finish came when Rhino gored Jake Crist, and that was after Crist took out Tommy Dreamer. So Rhino gets the pin on Jake for the 1-2-3. After the match, Madman Fulton comes out and attacks Rhino. Also takes out Tommy Dreamer, hits him with the spinning flatliner. So, I mean, they're continuing to do this like kind of ECW versus OVE type thing. I guess. I'm not going to keep complaining about it. This is what they're doing. I mean, it could be worse than Rhino and Tommy Dreamer representing kind of that group. They're not always a group together, but, you know, I kind of always have to lump in Rhino, Tommy Dreamer, and like, you know, when they're involved in the same show, like Sandman and all those kind of people, Sabu, you know. So, but that'll just say, you know, the team of Tommy Dreamer and Rhino, they defeat OVE, and that feud looks like it's going to continue. Kira Hogan defeats Susie next. She gets the win with a Fisherman's Buster. And in the main event, the North defeat the team of Tessa Blanchard and Eddie Edwards to retain the Impact World Tag Team Championships. The finish comes when the North knock Eddie off the apron and then hit Tessa with their finisher for the 1-2-3. After the match, Eddie and Tessa argue, and then Tessa is attacked by Michael Elgin. Eddie then leaves, and Elgin hits an Elgin bomb on Tessa and holds the title up as they go off the air. So last week, Tessa and Eddie kind of formed an alliance to take out Michael Elgin, to team up against him. This week, it was kind of everyone for themselves, and Eddie allowed Elgin to continue the attack on Tessa. So interesting. Interesting dynamics here being played. As they lead into the triple threat match for the World Heavyweight Championship, of course, Tessa versus Eddie Edwards versus Michael Elgin, which I think will be a really, really good match. It's just going to be interesting to see kind of when that match happens and what the result of that match is, because I don't know if they're looking to give Tessa a long title reign, but if they're not, I mean, Eddie Edwards and Michael Elgin are both good choices to be the next champion. What I'd prefer to see is Rich Swann take the belt off of Tessa Blanchard, but that's just wishful thinking because I keep talking about how I want Rich Swann to win the title, Willie Mack. Rich Swann would be a good option too, but I think he's currently hurt. Willie Mack and Rich Swann, of course, you know, tag team there too. So, The North gets the win, though, in the main event. I love that. I mentioned earlier, the team of the North, Josh Alexander and Ethan Page, are just fantastic. And one of the best things that's going on in Impact Wrestling is that tag team. So, good stuff. Moving on, we have results for Major League Wrestling's Fusion. The show started off with Douglas James defeating Septimo Dragon by submission. Gets the one with a guillotine choke to force the tap out. Get a whole bunch of recaps and stuff like that, which I'm not going to talk about because we haven't been highlighting this show often enough here on the weekend or to where that would make sense to go through all that, but it led into the main event, so there's just a two-match show, but the second match was amazing, just incredible. Just incredible, speaking of ECW. Mance Warner defeats MJF by pinfall in a loser-must-leave MLW empty arena match. Just crazy stuff here. And for those of you who don't know the history of the two, Mance Warner and MJF were both known as the eye poke gods, like way back in the day. I say way back in the day. This is a couple years ago, maybe a few years ago. They actually had a really great match in SUP in Nashville, the two of them, and Ethan Page was in it as well. And the three of them just eye poked the heck out of each other for a lot of the match. It's funny because like Mance and MJF have like this weird mutual respect for the eye poke, but they couldn't be any more different as far as characters are concerned. Like Mance Warner is like this kind of redneck, and not in like a disrespectful way, but he's kind of like this like redneck Southern throwback, almost like 80s style wrestler, but does everything that you would want out of like a 2020s wrestler. Like he can go in the ring. He does kind of throwback stuff, but mixes it in with like the new school stuff. Does a lot of crazy hardcore kind of cringy stuff as well. Bleeds a lot. He does a lot of crazy stuff. So he pushes the boundaries when it comes to kind of hardcore wrestling as well, but can do traditional stuff also. One of my favorite performers, one of my favorite gimmicks, the lariats and light beers stuff, and, you know, just great, great stuff. I've drank beer with Mance Warner before in person. He is a good dude, and I hope nothing but success in his future. I think he's going to be a major star, and I think he'd be best suited in AEW. I've said it in past episodes of The Weekender. I'd be surprised if it took Mance Warner much longer to get signed to a company like AEW. He'd be well suited in a company like Impact as well if there wasn't interest from the other promotions or even like New Japan. But I think that there will be interest in him. I just have this feeling that he's closely linked to a lot of people that are part of AEW. And, you know, MJF is a perfect example. He wrestled him in this match. The match ended, by the way, with Mance Warner hitting a headbutt, and then a lariat to pin MJF after MJF had hit him with an eye poke. So MJF is forced to leave MLW. That obviously makes sense because he'll be going full-time, I'd imagine, with AEW. There's no really need to continue to work MLW or any other indies, really, when you're in the position that MJF's in. He's being presented as one of the top stars of AEW. He's got a long run ahead of him. Especially, I mean, if he can stay healthy, he's got youth on his side also. I mean, he's going to be a massive, massive star for years to come for AEW. So there's really no risk in him wrestling anywhere else, in my opinion. So that was MLW. And lastly, I just wanted to mention, I said it at the top of the show, but I saw recently that they are going to be releasing new episodes of Tiger King. I think maybe one new episode of Tiger King to Netflix. I'm not sure when that's coming. I think it's pretty soon. So I wanted to mention, you know, everyone's talking about that show. I watched it. I've actually watched the series twice on Netflix, believe it or not. But Joe Exotic, who is basically the main character of the story, he is involved. He was involved in professional wrestling a little bit. I saw on his YouTube channel where he was commentating for some local independent promotions and stuff like that. So he was loosely involved in independent wrestling, for those of you who may not have known that. I mean, I had no idea. I had no idea this guy existed until the documentary. But back in 2016, Tim Storm, who is a former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, met Joe Exotic. And if you want to hear his experience with meeting the Tiger King, years ago, back before all like this massive fame has come around, and back before the NWA was like really, really hit its resurgence period, that they've hit, in recent years, you might want to check that out. It's just kind of interesting to hear Tim Storm talking about meeting Joe Exotic back in 2016. That's available right now for free on the NWA YouTube channel. So that's going to do it this week for the Fightful Select Weekender podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Hope everybody has a great week. Make sure to give me a follow on Twitter at @FightTalk_. That's FIGHTTALK_. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.